Side 9, Lord Brocktree, by Brian Jakes. Continuing on page 356. Dumai's lip pouted sulkily as he laid another shaft on his bowstring.
The strike dog cheated. He moved. But I still got him, Rip. Watch me finish him off with this next error.
But Ruff was already moving. Grabbing Bucko's javelin, he kept his eyes on the vermin head he had spotted poking above the rocks atop the second level, one paw out straight, the other wide outstretched. Balancing the weapon, the big otter did a hop-skipping sideways run right across the arena. His footpaws pounded the sand as he gained momentum, one eye centered firmly on the high target, and he let out an almighty yell as he hurled the javelin with all his strength. It whistled up through the hot summer air with almost every eye on it, up, up, with breathtaking speed. Dumai had the arrow stretched tight on his bowstring. He stood up and placed his cheek against it, closing one eye to sight on Brocktree. Though he had not intended it, Ruff's javelin actually cut the bowstring. Dumai could not lower his chin. He turned to show his brother the javelin, growing out of his neck on either side, and fell dead on top of him. With a sob of horror, Rip Fang heaved the body off himself and fled. Lord Brocktree towered over Trun like a giant oak. As the wildcat tried to rise, he kicked him flat again. The pandemonium which had rung through the arena when the arrow struck the badger lord fell hushed. Every eye was on Brocktree, standing over his enemy, the barbed shaft embedded in his shoulder, filled with the terrible blood wrath. Dragging the arrow out without the slightest sign of a flinch, the badger lord flung it into the wildcat's face. Kicking the net to one side, he stamped down hard on the trident shaft. It broke with a loud crack, leaving Trun with a paw full of splinters. For the first time in his life, Ungat Trun felt cold fear. He tried to drag himself backward, but Brocktree's powerful paws seized him and hauled him up until their faces were touching. Like a knell of doom, the badger's voice rang in his ears. "Now I see your face, Ungat Trun! Look upon me!" Trun finally looked into the eyes of his tormentor, but this time it was no vision. The terrifying nemesis of his dreams had at last become flesh and blood. One word escaped the wildcat's lips and echoed around the silent, crowded shore.
"Mercy!"
The next thing every beast heard was the bone-jarring snap of Ungat Trun's spine as Brocktree caught him in a swift, deadly embrace. He picked up his sword, pointing with it at the huddled figure on the sand.
"Cast this thing into the sea!"
The second-level barricades fell, and a hail of arrows and slingstones shot out over the crowd.
"Eulalia!"
Bumping, falling, to the fleet of vessels, Alamandastron, Bucko Big Bones grabbed a sword, yelled,
"Yeah, let's send them on their way!"
Wassum,
"Log a log, a log a log!"
Rip Fang was already in the sea.
"Captain, 'tis ring! Wait for me!"
He caught a rope trailing from the after end and hauled himself up wearily over the rail and spit out seawater.
"Trun's dead. Everything's lost."
The fox curled his lip contemptuously.
"I know that, fool. Why you think I sail?"
Bucko was first to the sea. Dashing into the shallows after the fleeing vermin, he chanced to glance south at the vessel which was already crewed and underway. The mountain hare's eyes lit up with grim satisfaction. There, leaning over the stern rail, was the fox called Karangul. Bucko tore south, spray flying everywhere. Grasping his sword in his teeth, he gave a wolfish grin and went after the ship. Still sprawled by the stern, recovering his breath, Rip Fang watched the crew trim the sails to let the breeze take her south. He turned his attention to Karangul, who was guiding the tiller.
"Huh. Some mate you are, Fox. You was going to sail off and leave me after all the plans we made together, eh?"
Karangul did not even bother to look at him.
"Stop your moanin'. Got aboard, didn't ye?"
Rip Fang was facing away from Karangul, and now he could see Bucko swimming strongly after the ship. Suddenly, the sea rat became philosophical.
You're right, mate. I did get aboard, and well shut of that lot, too. Poor old Dumai's back there lying slain. Shame, that was. Still, worse things happen at sea, eh, mate?
Karangul aimed a sharp kick at Rip Van.
You don't mate me, rat. I captain now.
Rip Van continued appealing to the fox's better nature.
You don't mean that, do you? You said we was all going to be captains. I know Dumai ain't around no more, but that's no reason why we can't be captains together, is it, me old cully?
A sword appeared in Karangul's paw. He swung it upward, readying himself to take Rip Van's head off.
Only room for one captain on this ship.
Rip Van leapt up and sprang to attention, saluting smartly.
You're right there, captain. I wishes to report a beast following your ship. One of those long ears, just aft of us there.
Karangul went to the rail and leaned over. He felt a momentary wave of fear as he glimpsed Bucko, but it soon passed when he realized the hare was in the water while he was aboard a fast ship headed south.
Yeah, that long ear's come after me. I not know why.
Rip Van sneaked up behind Karangul and suddenly heaved him overboard into the sea.
Why don't you go and ask him what he wants?
Karangul wallowed in the vessel's wake, shouting at Rip Van,
Ahoy! Pull me up, mate!
The sea rat tut-tutted severely.
I ain't your mate. Remember what you said? Only room for one captain aboard this ship. Well, you're talking to him.
He tipped a broken mast spar over the side.
You can be captain of that. Steer careful, captain. Goodbye, and the worst of luck to you.
Karangul had lost his sword in the fall overboard. Bucko still had his. He sat on the spar facing the fox with the sword pointed at his eyes.
Ach, 'tis a braw day for sailing, my bonny wee foxy. Now ye set still there, and I'll tell ye a sad old tale about a poor young hare which was left for dead by a wicked old fox who bit him with a sword blade.
Bucko's chuckle was neither pleasant nor friendly.
Well, now, I see ye recognize me at last. Tell me, my friend, how does it feel to be without your great horde of vermin to help ye out?
Whoop! Karangul screamed in pain as the flat of Bucko's sword struck him smartly across his shoulder. The mountain hare bellowed in his face.
Tell me!
Evening sun was dipping low on the horizon. Dottie sat with all her friends and comrades in arms. From where they rested, on a broad terrace of rock slabs and vegetation, above the mountain's main entrance, the whole scene of that day's activities was spread before them. Like autumn leaves strewn by the wind, distant vessels ranged far and wide over the darkening sea, to the north and south, and out to the west. Shading his eyes from the sun's crimson glow, Stiffener watched them growing smaller.
Lots of those ships overladen with vermin, you know. I'd say some of them'll sink afore the next dawn comes.
Baron Drucko wrinkled his brow spikes in that manner hedgehogs adopt when they could not care less.
Serves 'em right. Ain't our fault they wouldn't stand and make a fight of it. Ha! Ran like forficarticers, they did.
No beast bothered inquiring what a forficartiker could be.
Well, I, for one, am jolly well glad they did run,
Dottie admitted.
We never lost one creature in that little scrabble across the shore to the shallows. What do you say, Ruff, old chap?
I'm with you, Missy. There was more vermin drowned than slain in combat. A score or so of ours wounded, no great slaughter. Almost what they call a bloodless victory.
An iron arrowhead clinked on the rocks, and Lord Brocktree emerged from an open window space to sit with them.
Any beast want to keep that as a souvenir of the battle?
Ruro dug it out of my shoulder.
That squirrel's a marvel when it comes to patching a beast up.
Girth viewed the badger lord. He had compresses of herbs bandaged to shoulder, back, side, and footpaw, plus one across his striped brow, which gave him a roguish air.
"Brr, you'm looking like he been in a good old Bartles,
Rocktree took a sip from the tankard he was carrying. "I suppose I do, but I'm feeling no pain at all. One of your cooks gave me this to drink, Draco. What is it?" The Baron took a drink and winked knowingly.
"Special old berry and pear wine with some cowslip and royal fern essence. That'll make you sleep tonight, sire."
Troby took a mouthful and nodded approvingly.
"Tastes absolutely spiffin'. Wish I'd been wounded."
Rogalaw tweaked the hungry hare's ear.
"Don't start talking about victuals and drink again, you great long-eared stomach. We're flat out of grub. But you won't need to wait long. Here comes my bird to the rescue."
Rulango soared gracefully in out of the evening sky. If it were at all possible for a heron to smile, Dottie would have said that the great bird tried his best. He was all over Brog, wafting him with both wings and knocking his beak against the sea otter's paws, as if checking he was unhurt. Brog stroked Rulango's neck to calm him down.
"Steady on there, old mattress back. I'm all right. How's my mom and the rest of me mates? Snug and safe, are they?"
Rulango placed both wings over his eyes, letting his head bob up and down. Rogalaw roared, laughing.
"Still weeping and crying, eh? Good old mum. She and her pals ain't happy if they can't have a good blubber. Listen, matey, you get back to the cave and tell them to womp up victuals for victors. Lots of the stuff. As much as they can cook afore morning. I'm sending Southpaw and Bob Weave, Dervy and Conal and some Gwossam over there, and we'll get 'em moved, lock, stock, and victuals back here. I tell you, mates, I feels a feast coming on."
Stiffener's eyes lit up, as did many others.
"I say, splendid idea, old lad. What?"
"Aye, a great feast at Salamandastron.
With enough scoff to sink a gang of my rabble-ogs."
"And singing and music for days and days," Gran added.
"Oh, and darncing, too. Oi likes to dance.
And when it goes dark, we'll light big bonfires on the beach so we can carry on all night."
"Capital. And Miss Dottie can play the hair accordion and sing. Why didn't I think of that, South? What a great wheeze."
Ruff pulled a face.
"Don't you think we suffered enough in battle?"
Dottie stared severely at the otter, then broke out giggling.
"I'll sing an extra long ballad just for you."
Lord Brocktree laughed until the bandage on his brow slipped and fell over his eyes.
"Oh, look out, it's gone dark. Time for bed, you lot."
Sounds of merriment rang out from the happy creatures on the mountain, so loud that a pair of seagulls, building a nest in the rocks, squawked complainingly. The birds had come back to the western shores. 37. It was lonely on the far reaches of shoreline to the north of Salamandastron. Night had fallen over the restless sea. A flood tide was rising, claiming back the flotsam and jetsam it had cast up on its previous visit. How long Ungat Trun had lain there, he could not tell. Salt water crusted the wildcat's eyes, slopping bitterly into his half-open mouth. He could not move his body. Most of it was numb, frozen solid, as if encased in a block of ice. But his chest, head, and neck were on fire with unearthly pain. The last thing he could recall was the Badger Lord, crimson-eyed as they came face to face, snarling at him.
"Now I see your face, Ungat Trun. Look upon me!"
Beyond that, everything was a blank and unknown void. But the wildcat was not dead. He recovered consciousness slowly, sodden, freezing cold and grunting in agony every time a wave smashed over his helpless body, moving him down the slope of the shore. Damp seaweed and the sharp edge of a shell pressed against his cheek. Something small and spiny scuttled across his face. From the corner of one eye, he could see a half moon and the star-scattered skies. Another wave buffeted him. Now he could see the sand and a rocky outcrop. Realization invaded his senses with a shock of terror as his awful position dawned upon him. He was lying at the mercy of the sea. Flood tide was drawing him back into the waves, where he would be swept out into the vast, unknown deeps. Hissing like a huge reptile, another wave crashed over him, rolling his broken body into the shallows. The wildcat turned his gaze landward and gave an agonized groan. Then he saw something. 2 footpaws and a bushy tail. Some beast, a fox, was sitting on the rocks watching him. Karangul. It had to be Karangul. His own voice sounded distant, strange to him, as he croaked out,
"Please, help me."
The fox came down off the rocks and crouched before him. Trun managed one word before the fox pushed him further into the water.
"Grottle?"
Then he was swept away on the current, drawn out to sea with rollers lifting him high on their crests and tossing him down into their troughs. Grottle watched the bobbing object until it became a far-out speck amid the night sea. He was chanting aloud, though his former master was beyond hearing the crippled fox magician whom he had bullied and tormented for so long. Nonetheless, Grottle chanted on.
"These are the days of Ungat Trun, the fearsome beast. Oh, mighty one, he who makes the stars fall. Conqueror, earthshaker, son of King Mortspear, brother to Verdaga, lord of all the blue hordes who are as many as the leaves of autumn. Oh, all-powerful Ungat Trun."
Turning his back upon the sea, the crippled fox limped away and was never seen in those lands again. 38. Mornings were dawning in soft mist. The days grew shorter, sunsets earlier and more crimson. The earth was turning its season from summer to autumn. Hares had come to the mountain, traveling from far corners to serve under the banner of Salamandastron's ruler, the fabled Lord Broktree. Travelers carried abroad tales of his valor and the brave army who had defeated the evil might of Ungat Trun and his blue hordes. There was a fresh spirit of joy and freedom upon the lands. Now any beast could range the earth in peace. But there were also creatures leaving the mountain to return to their homes. 10 ships from the defeated fleet had been recovered and made good and seaworthy. 2 score vermin captives, their coats scoured clean of blue dye, had worked on the vessels, making them ready for this special day. Bragaloth took 5 of the ships. His crew of sea otters and their families boarded, laden with gifts for their voyage south. Then he came ashore with Dervi, Conal, and the heron, Rilango, to say farewell. Dottie was embracing them when she went into floods of tears. She fought to stem them, to no avail.
"Oh, I say, you chaps, sniff, sniff, I feel absolutely dreadful, boo-hoo. Can't help myself, Brog. Wah! Getting your tunic all wet. Look, boo-hoo-ha!"
The kindly sea otter skipper gave her his kerchief.
"Ha-har! You carry on, miss. I'm used to this sort of thing, you know. What with my mum weeping and wailing, I'll wager we end up bailing out tears to stop us sinking afore we're back home down south coast."
Lord Broktree stood in the mountain's main entrance, waving with his sword as Brog and his friends returned aboard their ship.
"Farewell and fair winds, friends. Brog, you'll come back and visit, I trust?"
"Aye, Lord. Keep the victuals a-cookin'. You never know what season the old bark crew'll come blowin' up the coast to eat you out of house and home. Watch out for us, Ruff."
Tears sprang into Ruff's eyes, and he looked at the badger. Broktree nodded and clasped his paw fondly.
"Go on. Get along with you. See you next spring, mayhap."
Kissing Dottie, Ruff bounded past her into the water.
"Ahoy, Brog! I'm coming with you. I always wanted to learn how to be a sea otter. Lend a paw here, mates."
As he was hauled aboard, Bucko Big Bones came marching out of the main gate, followed by his mountain hares.
Ach, wheel, Brock, there's my ships, and here am I. I won't stand a-rooned weepin' like a wee bairn. 'Tis aft-ay the North Mountains for me and my clan. Mind, though, we'll be ever ready to come if you call for us. Not that you'll be needin' help. A braw beast like yourself, with all these fine young hares a-floodin' in by the day. Fare ye weel.
Dottie held Bucko's paw before he boarded his vessel.
I'm going to miss you pretty awfully, you know, Bucko. Wouldn't you consider staying on a few seasons? Help me to command the new long patrol that Lord Brock's forming. We'd have lots of super adventures, you and me, ranging the shores and woodlands and whatnot. What, what?
The mountain hare ruffled her ears affectionately.
Ach, no, lassie, I'm yearning to return to my mountains. But we'll be the Highland branch of your long patrol, if you like, and I'll call myself General Bucko. Fare ye weel, Dorothea, live lang and happy. You're a fatal beauty, the new.
Biting her kerchief so as not to let Bucko see her weeping, Dottie hurried back to the main entrance. Ruro was waiting for her, wearing a silver medallion about her neck.
Look at the honor thy badger lord bestowed upon me. I'm to be leader of my tribe. 'Tis called a Juka medal.
The hare maid inspected the beautiful insignia, a likeness of Juka, twirling what else but a sling.
It's lovely, Ruro. I won't say goodbye, 'cause your pine grove's not more than a couple days' walk from us. We'll call and see one another often, what?
Ruro signaled her tribe to move off.
'Tis a promise, Dottie.
Dottie turned to Logalog Gren.
And you, Grenmarm, you and your Gwasim will be on your way then, won't you, what?
The shrewd chieftain nodded, close to tears herself.
If ever you need us, just send word.
Merklewort chased after Skittles. He came out of the mountain like a tiny boulder, knocking Dottie flat. A great smile plastered all over his cheeky face.
We gonna stay on a mounting a few seasons, with you and Bark. I paggle every day in a water with you, Dottie.
Merklewort took a swipe at the hog babe with a dish towel, but he scampered up onto the badger lord's sword hilt.
Chop you tail off if you do that again, mummy.
Girth flicked Skittles' snout with his digging claw.
You have respects for your mother, Licklezer. I'm staying here just to keep an eye on ye, villain. And as for ye, Miss Dot, you'm come with oi. Your Aunt Blanche says ye got to learn ye cookin'.
Dottie ducked beneath Brocktree's paw for protection.
Oh, I say, sir, bit much, isn't it? How in the name of seasons is a gal supposed to be bosses of your blinkin' long patrol and walk around the bloomin' kitchens helpin' Aunt Blanche? What am I, patrol bosses or flippin' cook?
Brocktree hid a smile as he looked down at her. The title is Patrol General, miss, not bosses. And there's a whole lifetime ahead of you, Dottie. You're still young enough to learn lots of new things. Now, is every beast here? I see they've hauled anchors. Brog's bound south and Bucko's bound north. Striding out on the sands, Brocktree looked about at the legions of hares sitting on the mountain terraces and perched on the shore rocks.
Up on your paws now, my friends! He called. Let's give our departing comrades a real salamandastron farewell. Ready? 1, 2.
Leaning over the sterns of their vessels, both Bragalov and Bucko Big Bones could not help joining in with the thunderous roar from the shore. The 10 ships sailed off into the golden afternoon with the farewell war cry gladdening the hearts of all.
Eulalia!
Epilogue. Lord Rossano put aside the final piece of parchment. His pail was empty, the tabletop covered in bundles of scrolls. He looked around the crowded dining hall.
So there you have it, my friends, how the great Lord Brocktree first came to our mountain, and the odd bond of comradeship which existed between him
and a young hair maid. Dottie, as far as my researches show, became the first officer when our long patrol was formed. Thank you for listening to my account. The audience cheered him to the echo, standing to give the Badger Lord an appreciative ovation. There was only one creature not applauding, Rosano's son, Snowstripe. He was 3 seasons younger than his sister, Melanius, and still a dibbon in many ways. Snowstripe had been sitting on his mother's lap, listening to the final episode of his father's narrative when he had drifted off into a slumber. Rosalon had covered him with her shawl and let him sleep on. It was the noisy volume of the cheering that woke him. Snowstripe yawned, rubbing sleep from his eyes. Rosano gathered his little son up, still wrapped in the shawl. Come on, matey. Time you were in bed. Looking up at his father, the youngster murmured drowsily,
Is the story finished, Papa?
The Badger Lord shook his head solemnly. Only a part of it, my son, a small part. One day, you and your sister will rule this mountain, and you will find that the story carries on. Both of you will live through your own adventures, make good friends of honest creatures. The defense of our coasts will be your responsibility, though fate and seasons forbid that you will have to face vermin, invasion, and war. Salamandastron's story will continue as long as there are brave badgers to rule the mountain wisely. Your mother and I have often told you and Melanius the law of badger lords. Can you remember what we said? As they mounted the stairs, Snowstripe's eyelids began to droop, but he recited by heart the lessons he had been taught.
Defend the weak, protect both young and old, never desert your friends. Give justice to all, be fearless in battle, and always ready to defend the right.
Snowstripe gave out a yawn, and his eyelids fluttered, gradually closing. Anything more? Rosano whispered in his ear. As sleep overcame the little badger, he nodded.
The Badger Lord of Salamandastron must always show a welcome and good cheer to all of true heart who come to visit here in peace. Our gates will be ever open to them.
Snowstripe's voice trailed off as slumber claimed him, and Rosano completed the last line for his son. For this is the word of the Badger Lord and the law of Salamandastron, passed down to us from Lord Brocktree. End of Lord Brocktree by Brian Jakes. BrianJacques. Illustrated by Fangorn. Read by Brian Kahn. In the studios of the American Printing House for the Blind, Louisville, Kentucky, for the Library of Congress, April 2001. Published by Philomel Books, a division of Penguin Putnam Books for Young Readers, 345 Hudson Street, New York, New York, 10014. Further reproduction or distribution in other than a specialized format is prohibited. If you found any cassette in this book to be defective, please place a rubber band or piece of string around that cassette for identification. Place it in the container on top of the front stack of cassettes.